name is Roy Hay, and I'm from IBM. And today I'm going to show you guys a new vulnerability that we detected in Bind. It has been fully coordinated with IOC, which is the organization behind Bind. Okay, so the agenda is to first begin with a short intro on DNS cache poisoning attacks, so we all be on the same page. Then I will shed some light on the name server selection algorithm that bind the users, and then we will dive into the new attack. Okay, so in a typical blind DNS cache poisoning attack, we assert that the attacker does not see the information between the DNS resolver and the DNS server, but manages to poison the cache of the DNS resolver nevertheless. So the first step is to induce some traffic between the DNS resolver and the DNS server, and the attacker does that by issuing some DNS query. In this example, he asks for the IP of IBM.com, and the DNS resolver will ask the IP of IBM.com from the authoritative name server. And at this step, the attacker races the DNS response, and if he wins the race, then the answer will be accepted by the resolver, and the genuine one will be ignored. Now, if this were the real world, then life would be very easy for the attacker because he only needs to win the race. So actually, each DNS query contains some random data, which is made of out of three parts. The first two are the TXID value, which is in the DNS header. The second one is the UDP source port. And the third one is the destination IP address. In case the query zone has multiple authoritative name servers, then the resolver can choose one of them to query. And we will see the algorithm behind this decision later on. So this data is random, and if there is no matching data in the answer, the answer is simply ignored by the resolver. So now the attacker has to first win the race and also guess the random data correctly. So in a more in harder situation, we have the IBM.com zone, and now it has multiple name servers, multiple authoritative name servers. And the resolver, in this case, it chooses name server 2, and it chooses the TXID value to be 2500 and the source port to be 1200. Now, if the attacker was lucky, then he guessed correctly the nonce, the random data. It spoofed the request as NS2 and chose the correct TXID and the destination port values. And if he won the race, then the data, the answer has been accepted by the resolver. And the genuine one was ignored. Okay, so we now understand that the security of the DNS transaction directly depends on the nonce, on the randomness of the DNS query. Now, since the source port and TXID were well studied in the past, we decided to focus on the name server selection. But one weakness of this kind of research is that most of the entropy comes from the UDP source port and TXID because they both combine into 32 bits of random data. And we will see next that the name server selection does not bring as much of entropy. But if we can indeed lower this entropy, then we may make existing attacks run faster, and they become more efficient. And in addition, an attacker can be on one path but not on another, meaning that if there are multiple name servers and the attacker is on some path between the resolver and some name server but not on the queried name server, then we can force bind to actually query the path that the attacker is on. So the attack can become a man in the middle one. Okay, so we wanted to understand how much entropy the name server selection can bring upon. So we downloaded the root zone file. It is available freely. And made this CDF graph, and we can see that more than half of the TLDs, almost half of the TLDs, have more than 8 authoritative name servers. So this means that the name server selection algorithm, if it is truly random, and we will see that it has some random properties, it can bring some entropy into the DNS transaction. Okay, so now we can shed some light on the name server selection in bind. So the goal of the resolver is to choose the most responsive name server by the round trip time. But the problem is that the RTT, the round trip time, is a property that changes frequently. So what bind does, it maintains some moving average of the RTT. Moving average over time, and keeps this value for each name server IP. This value is initialized with a very low number, between 1 and 32 microseconds, which is chosen randomly. Each time bind receives the DNS answer, this value is updated with a weighted sum, which takes into account the old SRTT value and the new and the newly available RTT. And the weights are 0.7 for the old SRTT and 0.3 for the RTT. Now, in case there is some zone with multiple authoritative name servers, then when bind chooses one server to query, the non-queried name servers, in order to avoid starvation, their SRTT value is decayed with a factor of 0.98. Now, this is very important because this is the weakness of the algorithm that we will get to it later on. In case there is a network error, then the old SRTT value is punished with 200 milliseconds with an upper bound of 1 second. Now, all of these values are kept inside a cache, and the cache keys are simply the name server's IPs. Now, the decision algorithm is simply to choose out of the authoritative name servers the one with the lowest SRTT value, which is very intuitive. Okay, so this means that the decision behind the name server selection is simply based on the SRTT values. So if the attacker can somehow control the SRTT value, then he can de-randomize the algorithm. And this can be done by using two different mechanisms. The first one is to increase the SRTT values of all candidate name servers but one, and the left one will be queried next if it will have the minimal value. And another possibility is to decrease the SRTT value of the target name server, so it will be minimum. So the name server selection has been actually studied. There was some works on the name server selection. The first one was actually 3 years ago by some Czech guy. He tried to decrease the SRTT of the target by sending fast spoofed responses by the target name server. And the other work was last year, and it abuses IP fragmentation. Both of the works, they target the update and the error operations of the SRTT algorithm. And the common characteristic of these two works is that they are both probabilistic, meaning that they don't always succeed. There is some guesswork behind them. So we present a deterministic attack that targets the initialize and the decay operations. So it is somewhat complementary to the previous work. And another cool feature of our attack is that the target name server that we lower its SRTT value does not see the attack at all. Only the resolver that we attack. All right, so we can now dive into the new attack. So we have the attacker's control PC. Every attack has some control PC. The attacker also have two name servers that he controls. The first one is A1, which is the authority of the A1.foo domain. And we also have A2, which is the authority of the A2.foo domain. Now we attack some resolver, and we try to, also have the IBM.com zone, and in this case it has two authoritative name servers. The number of authoritative name servers does not matter. Our attack works on an arbitrary amount of name servers. So we try to lower the SRTT value of V on the resolver, so it will be queried before NS. And I think that the coolest feature of our attack is that we abuse the non-open resolvers, which means that they don't answer on queries that on queries on domains that they are not authoritative of. There are plenty of these on the internet. Most of the resolvers are non-open. The attacker does not need to control them, he just needs to know their IP address. Okay, so let's begin the attack. We assume that the resolver is already preloaded with two SRTT entries of the IBM.com zone with V and NS, and we can see that V's SRTT value is higher than the NS value. And we will see how we can decrease this value to be lower than NS. Okay, so the first step of the attack is to somehow insert A2's entry into the SRTT cache. And the attacker can do this by simply querying some domain A2 is authoritative of. And in this case, it is A2.foo. So the attacker does that. He asks for the IP of A2.foo from the resolver. Now, when the resolver receives this query, since A2 was not in the cache before the query, it is added with a very low value between 1 and 32, according to the initialized operation of the SRTT algorithm. In this case, 21 was randomly chosen. The resolver will query A2. A2 will respond, and the SRTT value is now updated, taking into account the RTT. This is according to the update operation of the SRTT algorithm. And the IP is returned to the attacker. Okay, so the attacker now achieved his first goal to insert A2's entry into the cache. Now the attacker, he asks for the IP of attack.a1.foo, and since A1.foo is authorized by the A1 name server, the resolver will eventually reach A1. Again, A1 receives some an initial value, a very low value. Then the resolver approaches A1, asking for the IP of attack.a1.foo. And A1 replies. Now, A1 replies with a delegation. A DNS server does not have to answer the query. It can delegate it to other name servers. And in this case, the attacker delegates the answer to the list of non-open resolvers, to A2 and to V. All right? And now, since C1 to CN, the non-open resolvers, were not already in the cache, they are added. They receive a very low value between 1 and 32. And since A2 and V were already in the cache, their SRTT value is not updated. And now the resolver, since it was not satisfied, it will approach the name server out of that list, the name server with the lowest SRTT value, This is according to the decision algorithm. And we can see that the name server with the lowest SRTT value, in this case it is C2, but we can guarantee that the first name servers to be queried are the non-open ones, because they received a very low value between 1 to 32. So the resolver queries C2. C2, because it is a non-open resolver, it replies with a query refused answer. And now, the decay operation of the SRTT algorithm takes place. We can see that V's value decreases. It is now 98,000, and it was 100,000 before. And we can also notice that the SRTT value of NS, which is the other name server, does not change. It remains static. This is because NS was not on the delegation list of A1. Okay, so since the resolver is still not satisfied, it will query the next name server on the list, which is C1. C1 will be queried, asking for the IP of attack.a1.foo, and reply with a query refused answer. Again, because it is a non-open resolver. And again, this value is decreasing, the SRTT value of NS remains the same. And we can see where this is going. This value is decreasing over the resolution process. And after n minus one iterations, we are left with the last non-open resolver. It is queried and it refuses. And this value now after the n queries, it is now 100,000 multiplied by 0.98 in the power of n. And again, the resolver is still not satisfied, so it will ask A2. Now, since A2 is controlled by the attacker, A2 can reply to the query and return an answer. And again, there is another decay operation. And actually, this is now the final SRTT value of V after the attack, which is 100,000 multiplied by 0.98 in the power of n minus 1, a plus 1, sorry, which is much lower than the value of NS for large values of n. Okay, so this is the attack. And one important detail that I didn't mention is that we required that A2's SRTT value will be lower than V's. Otherwise, V would have been queried before A2. And we don't want to query AV because if we queried it, then the final SRTT value of V after the attack would take into account the real RTT value, and we don't want that. So actually, we've seen that for a large value of N, the resolver will actually time out during the iterative resolution process. So we don't actually need A2 because it will time out during the process of querying the non-open resolvers. So the only requirement for the attacker is to have a list of non-open resolvers. Okay, so let's wrap up. We've seen that we can lower the SRTT value of some arbitrary name server to an arbitrary value. Some cool features of the attack is that it is deterministic. It only requires 3 packets. And the recovery from the attack is not instant because of the update mechanism of the SRTT algorithm. And the general lesson, in order to avoid this vulnerability, is to somehow separate the cache. The cache should not be a global one. A name server should not be able to affect the SRTT value of non-related name servers. Maybe the cache can be separated according to the queried zone, for example. Okay, thank you.
our speakers.